This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalton Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Okay, so I'm here with Dr. Sonia Anton of Porto University. I'm just going to ask her a bit about her talk she did on Wednesday at the COST conference, which was on astrophysics of quasars and the Gaia satellite. So I thought probably best to start off with sort of a description of what a quasar is and a blazar as well, which are slightly different.
I prefer to talk about blazars.
Okay.
What they are, they are galaxies that have in their center very, very large black hole in terms of mass. So it's a supermassive black hole. And having or not having such a thing in the center of a galaxy makes a lot of difference. When you look to a normal galaxy, you essentially what you detect is the light of the stars, little bit of also from dust. But it's starlight. When you move to this kind of objects, you have the starlight, but then you have another kind of light that cannot explain with a normal black body spectrum, if you want. This is for the blazar, so there is a component that we talk about non-thermal emission because it's not explained by the thermal emission. This light is different also because it's polarized, and the light from the stars is not polarized.
So that's what a quasar is, or a blazar is. What you were saying in your talk that you wanted to use the Gaia satellite to study blazars. So what is the Gaia satellite, and sort of why would it be useful to use to study blazars?
Okay, so Gaia is going to be the next ESA mission, so it's going to be launched next year, and it's a mission thought to study very well our galaxy, the Milky Way.
Mm-hmm.
The Milky Way is not a blazar. We think that there is a black hole in the center of our galaxy, but is a small version of what a blazar is. So it does not have the characteristics of a blazar. Now, what Gaia is going to do is to look to stars. So it's not, the aim of Gaia is not extragalactic stuff. It's really our galaxy. So to measure very accurate positions of the stars and also the velocities. So to have a kind of a three-dimensional map of our galaxy. Now, the novelty of Gaia is that is going to have a very good astrometry in the optical. Is the first time that a mission is going to be such a good astrometry. So you really know the position of your object, and you know it with a very high accuracy, accuracy of microarcsecond.
So putting that into units that we can understand, that's like being able to measure the diameter of a human hair at 1,000 kilometers.
When the mission is in the space, the satellite has to know where it's looking to. So the way of doing this is to feed the satellite with coordinates of some of the objects that are known first. So if I tell the satellite, well, if you see this object, then the coordinates are blah, 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 the satellite can build a self-consistent solution to know when it moves what are the coordinates. And this seed catalog has to be of objects that have very good coordinates. And the objects that have the best coordinates are quasars or blazars because we can see them with radio. And in the radio, you have interferometry. You have things like Merlin and VLBI that give you very accurate coordinates of the order of microarcsecond. That's the order of accuracy of Gaia. Quasars are the objects, or blazars, if you want, are the objects that are really good for this. So that's the interest of Gaia in quasars. Because quasars are kind of point sources, you really don't know when you are looking, you really don't know if it's a star or if it's a quasar or what it is. And Gaia also, it's an all sky scanning thing. So it's passing and it's observing everything that's in front. So it's not going to distinguish if it's a star or a quasar. So it's going to observe a lot of objects. And the models say that probably it's going to see something like 500,000 quasars or AGNs. Better to say that's AGNs. And a lot of them are going to be new sources. So objects that were never before were not observed.
Okay, so the main point of Gaia then is sort of, in terms of quasars, is just to get accurate positions so they can map the rest of the galaxy.
I kind of, so yes, for the first bit, for the first part, you need the quasars to have a kind of candles that point you the position in the sky, mm-hmm. kind of. And in the second part, you'll have a huge amount of data that comes for free, even if it was not thought to observe quasars, but they are going to be observed anyway. So then you can take advantage of that. But quasars or AGN, it's not the main purpose of Gaia. The main purpose of Gaia is the Milky Way, is our galaxy. That's really the main purpose. Quasars or general relativity or extrasolar planets or things like that are kind of subproducts. They are very interesting, but it's not the main goal of the mission.
Okay, so basically you're sort of getting all this extra data, and that's why you were presenting on Wednesday, saying, yes. Look what we can do with Gaia as like a byproduct.
Yeah. Okay, so what is it you plan to do? I mean, you were talking about measuring the jitters of the centroid.
Would that be the quasar itself, the black hole at the centre? Could you talk through sort of what you were saying there?
Sure. So one of the things that is very important is for the first part of the mission that you really want to give to the mission very good coordinates, you have to rely in those coordinates, right? And as I said, we know very well the coordinates, or if you want, the centroid of the object in the radial, but we never observe in the optical with this kind of accuracy. And when we are talking about accuracies of microarcsecond scale, we don't know what we are going to find in the optical band. We have an idea, is that at microarcsecond scale in the AGN, there is a lot of things happening, because a lot of things happen in the central 1 parsec or so. You have the black hole itself, you have the accretion disk, you have the broad line region. Everything is there at more or less 1 parsec. And you are probing with Gaia, you are probing this kind of scale of the quasar. You want these coordinates to be very accurate in the optical. So our point is, we know that these objects vary in magnitude, in flux. That's one of characteristics of quasars. Actually, it's one of the characteristics that sometimes you can separate them from stars, because in the optical, with the arc second resolution, they are all point sources. But stars, or very few, vary. Quasars vary a lot. So our point was to say, look, these objects vary in flux. Is this going to be a problem? Is this going to influence, in some sense, coordinates, the centroid of the object? So this was the question that we posed ourselves. To try to answer this question, we got a sample of objects that we knew that varied a lot in the optical. And these objects were observed at La Silla, at ESO telescopes in La Silla, for almost 3 years. So each 2 or 3 months, the objects were observed. Mm-hmm. And by a clever way of doing things, it was not me, so I can't say it, you could get movements of the centroid in the scale of milliarc seconds. So we are 3 orders of magnitude larger.
And what sort of scale would that be again?
So Gaia is microarcsecond, mm-hmm. and we detect jitters of the centroid of milliarcsecond, so which was quite good, because you have kind of resolution of a little bit less than 1 arcsecond in this observation. So you have to do it in a clever way to get this kind of jitter. Anyway.
So just to make that clear, the planets, they tend to be about a few tens of arcseconds across. But you're talking about milliarcsecond resolution, so that's 1,000 times smaller. But with Gaia, that's even smaller again, at microarcseconds. So that's 1,000 times smaller again.
The point here is that we saw that as the object varied in flux, it also varied the centroid. This is important to Gaia, because we have to come with a model that can easily the uncertainties in this centroid thing when it varied. In the perfect world, I would get some kind of solution that if my object varies by some amount, I can tell you how much in the position is going to change. All right? Mm-hmm. So we are working on this. This is one bit of the story. The other bit of the story is to understand why it is happening, right?
So why it's moving at all?
Exactly. Why do I see this jitter? Why? What's the physics behind it? What is the explanation for this?
Do we understand why the brightness changes, or is it just the variation in the position that we don't understand?
We have some models to understand why there is a flux variation. The explanation can be a two-folded explanation. Can be instabilities of a accretion disk that illuminate more or less stuff that is moving around, and also can be perturbations along the jet. Some of these objects are jetted, so have radio jets, strong things, and there are some flares or some kind of enhancement along the jet that produces more output, and so you see these fluctuations in brightness.
Is that a short time scale that can happen on? Or is that sort of, as you see it, that's how it is for a few million years or some such?
No. You have what is called the micro variability and long-term variability. So you can have objects, the most extreme objects, that can vary in some hours, and you have the objects that can vary along the year, or the objects that can vary along the years. So you have all sorts of variability. So what we think that we can, not all the objects we can understand what's the origin of the centroid displacement. For some, we think that is related with the jet, because these are, some of them are jetted objects, as I was saying. The direction of so the jitter of the centroid is not random, but has a direction. And if you compare the direction of the radio jet with this direction, they are well correlated. That's one side of the story. The other side of the story is that the variation in flux of the radio and of the optical, in some cases, are also correlated. So you have two pieces of evidence. In one hand, you have the hints that the variation in flux in the optical in the radio is connected, and when you see in terms of morphology, if you want a kind of morphology, mm-hmm. you see that what is happening in the optical, even if you cannot resolve it because you don't have, you only see the centroid, is also connected with the radio morphology.
Right, okay. I think that was pretty much all what you talked about in your talk, wasn't it? So thank you very much for talking to me today.